you know, if you imagine yourself in your house in the middle of the night and you hear a noise, you go down to your kitchen and there's an alien stood in front of you. And, you know, if you picture that alien as artificial intelligence, the first thing you're going to ask them is not, you know, are you here to take my job? You know, the reality is that artificial intelligence and machine learning is a great thing, but like anything that has the ability to think on its own, it comes with dangers. I think from a workplace perspective, the use of artificial intelligence should help our people spend more time doing interesting things.
This is the She Innovates podcast, and I'm your host, Michelle King. On our show, we share the challenges and triumphs of women in areas like innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. So today, we're going to be focusing a little bit more on the future of work. It's an important topic for all of us because most companies are being disrupted with the rise of automation, robotics, AI, and other technological advancements. And the key question for men and women who are facing this in their workplace is how do they adapt to these changes? This is a particularly important topic for women. As we've mentioned, research on previous episodes undertaken by the World Economic Forum that shows on average women may be more adversely impacted than men. So today we've got two incredible leaders from the consulting firm EY who are here to help us unpack this issue. We're going to be hearing from Giles Morgan, Associate Partner at EY, and Julie Hood, Global Deputy Vice Chair at EY. So Julie and Giles, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
It's great to have you here on our She Innovates podcast today. You know, Julie, I just thought maybe we could get started by getting you to share a little bit about what the future of work means for you and, you know, why you think our listeners should care about this topic.
So if I start to think about the changing world of work, just purely in the context of Ernst & Young, you know, we have to think about where the direction of what is a people business. You know, we don't make widgets. We get to work with incredibly smart people and pull them together to collaborate, to provide value add to our clients. So the future world of work for us is how we make sure that in the future we can indeed do that. And technology for us, you know, could be seen in two ways. For many, it could be seen as daunting, but quite frankly, it's also a significant opportunity for us. So technology is a big shift. I think the other big thing is, you know, the access to talent. We have to think about the broad talent that is out there and not be constrained with how and where we have historically cherry-picked talent from, because that is changing and the skill sets we require are indeed changing. So, you know, incredibly topical for me, but also, you know, as a mum of two young kids as well, I want to make sure that the future world of work that they play in is actually a place that's also going to be exciting for them.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so too, Julie. You know, I think that's the whole point, right? We really want to make sure future generations benefit from some of the changes that are happening now, so we can come back to that. But I mean, what about for you, Giles? I mean, could you share your views on this topic?
When it comes to the future world of work for me, I think I actually come away from a little bit of work in the sense that I think it actually starts with education. And I think that one of the biggest problems we tend to look at, how we address gender diversity, how we address the skills gap that exists, particularly around technology and businesses, I think one of the things that's forgotten or the things that are going to impact the future is how we educate our children. And we're not educating our kids in the right way. You know, we are teaching them and we should be leading them on their educational journey. And I think that's shown in all of the statistics that are coming out around the skills gap and how particularly women are underrepresented in technology, for example. And a lot of that is pinned down to lack of early years exposure to technology. And so I think that, you know, we have an issue to solve in the workplace, but equally I think it's just as important to address the early years education and how we also educate within our businesses as well, because our businesses need to become learning institutions or educational institutions if we're actually going to survive.
Giles, you know, that's such a good point. And you've actually raised the issue that worries people the most, which is whether or not their skill sets are going to be needed. I mean, are robots going to be taking their jobs? I mean, what are some of the changes you expect to see over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I always quote Peter Thiel, the very famous venture capitalist. I think he did say something fairly recently that I thought was of interest, which is he said that, you know, if you imagine yourself in your house in the middle of the night and you hear a noise, you go down to your kitchen and there's an alien stood in front of you. And, you know, if you picture that alien as artificial intelligence, the first thing you're going to ask them is not, you know, are you here to take my job? You know, the reality is that artificial intelligence and machine learning is a great thing. But like anything that has the ability to think on its own, it comes with dangers. I think from a workplace perspective, the use of artificial intelligence should help our people spend more time doing interesting things. If you go back to the sort of industrial age and the years of sort of, particularly in the automotive industry and so on, and using automation and machines has helped automotive businesses along the way and allowed for more innovation in other parts of that industry. I think the same applies with our deployment of AI and machine learning in traditional businesses, which will allow, you know, it seems crazy, right? You study at university for 3 years, you're incredibly smart, and then you spend maybe 3 weeks looking through documents and reading through files when actually we should be using these people to use their brains to the best capacity rather than doing mundane work. So I think AI and machine learning will hopefully take away the mundane work that currently is being done in certain industries and free people up to think more. And I think by freeing them up and giving them more opportunity to do more interesting work will certainly feed more innovation and I think more interesting businesses.
And Julie, what about you? I mean, why do you think technology, AI, robotics, I mean, all these changes are quite scary for people?
You know, freeing up, enabling you to do more thinking and be more innovative is really exciting. But I think the reality is for a lot of people, they're comfortable with process. They're comfortable with, I'm happy to have my current work environment where if I follow these 5 or 10 or 100 or 1,000 steps, that constitute what my contribution is in my work. And I think the reality is that the technologies will change that. And for those that are comfortable with doing a process and getting recognized and rewarded for it, we're about to say, you know what, there's something that's more efficient or more effective, and we don't need you for that anymore. But what we'd really like, because we actually believe that you have it, is to be rewarded and recognized on your output from a value perspective. And I think that is scary for a lot of people who either have never had to do that or don't have the mindset or haven't been, you know, back to the learning and education piece, haven't been trained that that's okay. And I think that, to me, is it the scary thing of the alien at the door? I don't know. I think it is actually about the shift in no longer being rewarded and recognized for doing tasks and being rewarded and recognized for delivering value.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. It will be scary. And I mean, for the average person, right, who's sitting in an office, what could they start doing today to prepare for the future world of work? I mean, Giles, maybe you can answer that, right? I mean, what do we all need to learn to do differently? Do we all need to start coding? I mean, what is it that we need?
Yeah, I started out as a coder. Back then it was so old. I was a programmer back then. Now they're called devs or coders. No, I don't think people need to learn to code, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think, you know, one of the great times that we live in terms of now is that, you know, education and bite-sized modules of learning are available to us. You know, I'm probably a little bit weird, but I'm teaching myself to code in Python at the moment, not because I want to become a Python coder, but because I want to understand some of the technologies that I play with. And it's not just about technology. It's about understanding how innovation works, reading about the disruptors, the companies that have changed the world that we live in, the likes of Google and Amazon, and some of the great leaders that are out there. I think the world has changed, particularly about learning, about how you can read about a new technology or try and get an understanding of where these disruptors are coming from. I think that's where I would give advice to people to start thinking about these things, the new models, the new business models. And I think that's where, when you're growing in your career, that's where you're actually going to gain benefit from actually taking it upon yourself to teach yourself. And, you know, in the world that we live in, you never stop learning. So you read this every day in every newspaper, that every leader is pretty much reading, you know, a book or one book every week or 2 weeks or whatever. So I think that's really, really important and something that I live by.
And Julie, I mean, same question for you, right? So what could people start doing today to better prepare for some of the changes that are coming?
I think whatever it is for the individual to get comfortable with what technology's output would be, you need to do that. So for Giles, it would be, you know, the technology he gets to play with, he needs to understand it. For others, it needs to be whatever it is to trust it. So, and I'll give you the parallel. When I joined EY 16 years ago, I was not an accountant. You know, so you're surrounded by people who their whole lives revolve around compliance and accountancy. And for a while, I thought I had to be one of those. But then I went through the process, and the value add that I bring to Ernst & Young, even that long ago, was actually I needed to be comfortable with what my accounting colleagues and their output, and I needed to trust it. But I didn't need to understand it all the way through the technical pieces of it. Because the value add that you have, I think, in absorbing and being prepared for change and the future of work is actually what you do with it. So you need to be comfortable with it, and then you need to think about the adjacency. And I think that's where we don't all have to wake up tomorrow and be coders. I mean, it's going to change so many aspects of work, and it is changing so many aspects of work that will create new industries, new jobs, new thinking that will be there for the taking. And I think that's where you've got to have that balance.
Technology has dramatically transformed the way that we conduct business. According to research from EY, 52% of Fortune 500 companies have either gone bankrupt or have been acquired or ceased to exist due to digital disruption. So Julie, I mean, you know, with workplaces facing continuous disruption, how do you think women are going to be impacted compared with men? So do you think there's going to be a difference? I mean, do you think it's going to be similar? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, the reality is I think the mindset piece is really interesting. I think the future world of work through enabling technologies will allow greater flexibility, especially if we move into a more entrepreneurial in an output-focused world where value of the output is generated. Quite frankly, where you do it, when you do that, and how you do that in many jobs will continue to become more flexible. I think there's upside in tapping into an incredibly diverse workforce that actually, quite frankly, has had limited ability to play flexibly in the world of corporate. So I think it will provide access at a greater level. I think the other half as well is I think that mindset, you know, from a gender difference, most women at some part of their life have had to be, and I'm not saying all men haven't either, but I think a lot of women have had to flex and be agile and juggle multiple challenges in their lives, whatever it has thrown at them. And I think that that is just going to be a baseline requirement as the future world of work changes. You put in there an empathy to ensure you can drive change and outputs, and I think also, you know, maybe from a bias perspective, I think women are actually pretty good at that. Once again, there are, you know, all diverse workforces and individuals are good at aspects of that, but I think women are actually pretty well positioned to take advantage. That's my belief.
So, Giles, you know, I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think that, you know, women should be optimistic?
Yeah, and I'd support Julie's thoughts on that. I think, you know, when I look at it, I look at it from a technology perspective. You know, I think when I look at technology, it's quite interesting. There's a report that's done called the Inclusive Top 50, of which an independent panel looking at the most inclusive firms in the UK, and I'm pleased to say that, you know, CEY, they're right up there at number two. What was shocking about that list, though, from last year was that there was only a couple of tech companies listed in there, which surprised me. But I think, again, it goes back to the way that we engage people. But also, as I said, you know, women are woefully underrepresented in terms of technology. And I was reading something recently about Satya Nadella, the Microsoft CEO, in his book where he said hit refresh. And I think if you look back in history, we look at how the world sits at the moment, and it's quite a frightening position in terms of where the world sits at the moment. But we also sit, you know, if you look at it from a positive perspective, is that we're innovating beyond the realms of, I think, that we could ever think that we could innovate. So actually, when Satya Nadella said we need to hit refresh in his book, I think we stand the best chance, you know, in history to actually say, do you know what, if we're actually going to do this and we're actually going to close the gender pay gap and we're going to solve this problem, we need to hit refresh and someone needs to stand up. And I think that starts with business leaders, it starts with governments, and it starts with educational institutions. And I think that if all three of those get together, then we can solve that problem.
So look, I've only got a couple more questions before we wrap up. But generally towards the end of the show, I like to get as many practical sort of solutions or pieces of advice that you've got. So Giles, you know, I'd like to start with you and maybe get you to share, you know, what you think companies can do to better prepare for some of these changes.
I think one of the biggest issues that we have in business is actually understanding our skill sets within business. You know, there's a distinct lack of understanding and data around who's working in our firm or in a particular business. And understanding that skills capability, I believe by understanding that better, we can actually drive forward the careers of the right people at the right time. Whichever way you look at it, and I'm not one to shy away from opinions, but I think, you know, we, FTSE 100 is 27.7% female on the board, and I think that's got to increase. And until that increases to what is an acceptable level, then I think that that's going to be a blocker.
And what about you, Julie? I mean, what do you think companies can do differently or start doing to prepare for the changes?
I think we need to help assist individuals, inclusive of myself, to understand this in two levels, one, the tactical and also the strategic. I think, you know, we need to enable people to have access to whatever it is, whether it's the training around the technical pieces because that's how they're wired, or other tactical elements with regards to enabling change management or, you know, shifting evolution of sort of workforces. We have to think about that at a tactical level. But I think what's also very important is enabling the business and individuals within it to consider the strategic changes that have to occur, because to me that plays more to the mindset. Because I think if we open up that capability with regards to understanding technical and what everything can do with regards to artificial intelligence and machine learning, but the business doesn't have the maturity to change its operating model or its strategic intent of why, then ultimately I don't think that's going to succeed. So I think you have to run both in parallel. And when you're a successful business, it's a pretty interesting, you know, time when you don't have a catalyst for change because it's not right here now. You know, is there a material event in the future? Probably. But the reality is you can't wait. You can't wake up overnight and be ready for that. So it's making sure that there's enough people in the business that when you open up the art of the possibility, that the business is ready for it. And I think, you know, that's tough when you're changing an operating model in full flight.
So look, I know you both have children and, you know, with the work that you do, I just wondered, you know, what advice you have for younger generations coming through. So Giles, you know, maybe we can start with you. I mean, what practical things do you think younger generations can do to maybe start preparing for some of these changes?
I think, you know, I've got three kids, two boys and a girl. I think what I try and teach them is really focused on, you know, I'm always harping on about the educational piece. You know, as I said before, I think weirdly enough, one of the biggest problems that we have in this world today is education. And I think some of the most successful innovative organizations that are going to come through in the next few years will be education focused. I try to teach my kids, to be honest, to have fun, because I think even though I'm a technologist, I think that certain technologies have ruined my kids' lives. And I can't believe I'm saying this, Michelle, but, you know, oh my God, I wish I could get rid of the iPhone and the iPad and go back to the days where they were outside and playing more. But I think one thing that I want to get through to my kids is making learning fun. And my youngest son, I've mentioned this before, has a processing issue. And so he has to work harder than my other kids, a bit like I was when I was younger. But we've made the whole process fun. And I think we've lost that in education. So one of the biggest things I try and teach my kids is that actually education and learning is actually really fun. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I would recommend to anyone with their kids. And also just read. Read different things. Learn about the technologies because they're not that complicated. People make them complicated. The people who make them complicated for you want to sound really intelligent. But actually, you know what? Technology isn't that complex when you get under the hood as such. So I think that's my advice.
And Julie, I mean, what about you? What advice do you have for younger generations?
You know, I think for me, it probably comes back to this word of value. I think it's, you know, truly step back and understand the value you contribute in what you do today and actually how you believe that's going to evolve from a value perspective, I think is will be different for everybody, but, you know, truly understand that and, you know, be aware of that, because that should set your path for kind of what next, I think. I think the other one is, you know, there's a balance between knowing the answer or having the technical capability and making sure that you have the ability to be able to deliver it succinctly or with confidence, whether they're equal for everybody or not, but there is definitely a balance. So, you know, being incredibly smart on a topic or incredibly knowledgeable about something is half the equation. The other half is having the capability to be able to deliver and influence whatever that is, depending on what you do. I think we need to be recognized. My kids, I do try and have that. I want them to be knowledgeable, but I want them to be confident in how they present it. And that will evolve as we start using technology in a different way again. So I think those equal balance.
So I really hope you guys learned something from our conversation with Julie and Giles today. You know, one thing that's become pretty clear to me from this conversation is really that to survive the changes that are coming, we have to be flexible. We have to be flexible both in terms of the type of work that we're willing to do and how we do it. And this really means that learning is going to become a never-ending process. So if you thought learning stopped when you left university, I've got pretty bad news for you. For everybody else, though, if you can just get comfortable with this idea that you have to develop a learning mindset, then you should do pretty well, because your value is not going to be tied up to just one job or just one employer. You know, rather, your value is going to be in the skill sets that you have and that you continue to develop. So keep learning. I think that's the key takeaway. So look, I really hope you all enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to catching you all again next week.
From the Human Group, She Innovates is a podcast created with support from SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.